The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
This is a presentation from Dream Realm Enterprises, where dreams are our reality.
You are listening to Robots of the Company, The Creative Perspective, a special celebrating 10 years of Robots of the Company.
I apologize right now before we even begin I'm recording this late August. It's still late summer, I suppose. It's pretty candid. I'm in my room at home and recording this, and the autumn insects are already starting to make their presence known. So if you hear anything like that in the background and other erroneous noises, you'll know why. So forgive me that this recording is not perfect. It's not studio bound or anything like that. It's just a candid interview, so I hope you enjoy it, as I'm going to talk about Robots of the Company, and primarily the beginnings and a few memories along the way. Enjoy.
Welcome, friends and fans of Robots of the Company. This is the first of our exclusive specials, celebrating a decade or more of the phenomenon that is the bots, or Robots of the Company, or even ROTC, as some fondly call it. In this special, we will be hearing a candid conversation with series creator Jonathan Patrick Russell, as he talks about the creation of the bots, the on-again, off-again production of the series, the fact that it has now been 10 incredible years, and about the continued production of the series as the new 8th season approaches. We will be privy to John's memories, fascinating behind-the-scenes facts, and his memories of 10 amazing years of the bots. So prepare yourselves as we take a journey within the creative mind behind an iconic comedy series that has become a much-beloved online institution. Robots of the Company, The Creative Perspective, starts now.
Can't stand the heat, little girl? Why not get out of the kitchen? You oughta what?
Robots of the Company. 10 years. Over 10 years, as a matter of fact. We started that back in about March of 2005, somewhere in that time frame. And really, it was humble beginnings, because the story of DRE, Dream Realm Enterprises, the beginning is pretty difficult. There were hard times. There were fun times, some of them, but those early couple of years were real tough, because we sort of formed it in 2003. I brought a lot of the principal people into it, people that helped me produce shows at the time and pull everything together, organize the group and so on. And we had a nice little ensemble group of voice actors and other technical people that were working on this huge project, this audio production, and even online audio as it is today was in its infancy in a way at that time. And there weren't a whole lot of groups, and you know, I'm kind of proud that we were one of the earlier ones that were making a splash, if you can call it that. That might be overstating things, I don't know. But we had brought together some very talented people. I had people like Jeff Niles, who came on board at the time, who primarily was a voice actor then. He's become so much more now in this group, as well as others. And then there was Kyle Boers, who, of course, everybody knows as Briscoe. But before he was Briscoe, he was basically my vice president, if you will, of the company. And there was Kay Wu and a number of other people. I can't name everyone off, and I apologize to those that have been left out of that. But at that point, in 03, those were pretty much the principal characters, if you will. The thing is that we had started off, the idea was, we'll do some fan fiction, if you will, some audio fan fiction. And Doctor Who was the starting point. And we had our own Doctor, Ron Smith. He was playing the Doctor, something he had been wanting to do for a long time. He and I had collaborated for a number of years trying to get something together in the lines of fan-produced Doctor Who. When we went back and forth between doing things on audio and doing things on video and, you know, so on and so forth. It was a very storied history there for a number of years, trying to get that kind of stuff off the ground, as well as doing some original stuff, too, along the way, as we were trying, anyway. A lot of it just never got off the ground, and I met a lot of people through another audio group that I was involved with in the early 2000s, and met a number of these folks that came on board with me with DRE and helped form that. So Kay Wu was one of those people, and amongst others. But then, you know, DRE came along, and more people came along, and we met some very talented people. And we tried to bring it all together, and then I had this terrible computer crash, which just killed everything that we were doing, especially the Doctor Who series that we were desperately trying to get together. That was going to be our starting point. We were going to have Doctor Who, and we wanted to do good fan Doctor Who audio. We tried our best, and I think we came up with some good stories, but we had this terrible computer crash just as we were getting started. I had produced like the first part of a four-part story, and that was it, and everything was just in tatters. And so for like a year or more, we're sitting there trying to piece all this stuff together, trying to get files back or re-recording things, rewriting things, etc., etc., trying to get it all back to where it was. It was a huge setback. But in the meantime, once I got a new computer, and we were all making the effort to get everything back to where it should be, I just thought, you know, we've been talking about this DRE, Dream Realm Enterprises, for so long about doing audios for now over a year, and nobody's heard anything from us. We need to do something, you know, we need to do something and get something quickly produced and out there so that they know that we are still working behind the scenes, and we're serious about this, and so that we can be heard, so that we can, our voices can be out there amongst the many others that were starting to pop up. So I came up with this little idea, and I don't know where it started, where it came from. It may have even been sort of collaborative, because we all were talking about what can we do, what can we, you know, what quick, easy, short thing can we do to put some attention onto us, you know, to bring some attention to us. I don't know. It was one of those ideas that happened at like 3 a.m. in the morning, and I'm just sort of sitting around contemplating, should I go to bed? What should I do? I really want to come up with this concept. What should I do? And then it just, something hit me. I don't know. Maybe I had just listened to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or something, but at any rate, I thought, I love those little characters in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They're nothing. They're just minor, little, quirky characters. They're robots. There's like a talking elevator. There's a talking coffee machine. There's a talking computer. There's all these kinds of, you know, there's the depressed robot. There's all these characters. And the only one that was sort of a major character was Marvin, the depressed robot. But you had all these other robots that were robots or mechanics that just weren't a major part of the story, but they helped to make it so funny because it just created that background. It created that world, that bizarre world of Douglas Adams. And I just thought it would be wonderful to have something like that, but not a big long trilogy, quadrilogy, etc., etc., but just something that was a quick little sort of almost sketch comedy that we could put out once every now and again to let people know, hey, we're here, we're producing something, listen to this, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. So I came up with the concept of two characters, and they were, and actually I don't think it was even robots originally, but it was, I just had this idea for Putch and Squeak. That was the first. That was the first thing, and I was reminded of that recently by Kay Wu. That was actually the beginning, not the robot part, but just those two characters that I had just thrown out there as a teaser, saying, "Oh, you're going to hear Putch and Squeak real soon," and I didn't know what they were. I honestly didn't know. That's the funny thing. I had no idea what I was really going to do with these two characters. I had sort of had a little idea. It was just going to be sort of a double act of these two characters that would maybe be on a stage and be comedians. And they wouldn't necessarily be human or anything like that. I didn't know if they were going to be humans, aliens, puppets, what they would be. You know, it's sort of like taking an idea of Fozzie Bear and then saying he's got a partner. And sort of a vaudevillian idea of, they're going to be joking around, and maybe we'll see what happens behind the scenes. And then the robot idea came in from the Hitchhiker thing. And I said, okay, why don't I take these two characters and turn them into robots? And then I'll create other robots around them. It'll be a spaceship. And there won't be any humans. They'll have to be running the spaceship. And there'll be an entire company that they have to answer to. It'll be set in the future, and there'll be this company that runs everything. The corporations have taken over in the year 3000 or whatever. And, you know, it just built from there. So there's kind of the beginnings of Robots of the Company. So we came up with two short scripts, and that was season one originally. And it was, I don't know, hopefully it was kind of funny.
Got it.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I know. I love my job. Hey, welcome aboard. I'm Briscoe. I'm a cleaner bot. I just love to clean. I mean, I could spend days cleaning. I love cleaning even more than helping, but I love helping more than anything else in the world. I mean, it's just simply to help people, especially people I love. And you know what? I think I love you.
Hey, are you sure you're all right?
I'm zippity-doo. How are you? You know what? You're my new best friend.
It was, you know, it was never intended to be a long-running thing. I never, ever imagined I would be sitting here in 2015 and talking about the 10th anniversary and season 8. That never occurred to me. And you don't think about stuff like that. You don't, when you're first creating something, you're not thinking long-term, necessarily. I mean, some things maybe you do. You might come up with this brilliant thing that you think is brilliant anyway, and think, wow, I'm going to get a lot of mileage out of this. This is going to be an epic series, and, you know, I'm going to have heroes and iconic characters and wonderful stories. Never works out that way when you think about it that way. So you can't plan for this kind of thing. You can't plan for success. You can't plan for longevity. I don't, that's not my philosophy. I don't plan ahead. I don't look ahead. I plan for things, but I don't plan beyond, you know, next month if I don't have to. When it comes to making a series, you kind of have to. Whenever starting a new season or a new series, a new season of a show or a new series altogether, you know you're going to be working on it for a while. Like season 8 of Robots, it's been in production off and on for well over a year, probably a year and a half, for various reasons. And we'll get into all that later. But you don't plan for 10 years. You don't look at it, especially a 10-minute sketch comedy, which is basically what it was. You don't look at that and think, well, I'm going to be here in 10 years and still doing this. No, I didn't know it had any legs at all. I just thought 4 or 5 episodes and we're done, and then we'll be back to Doctor Who and whatever else, and we'll get back on track. That was the plan. That was always the plan, is to get back on track with the other things. It was always about the serious stuff. I wanted to do drama. Not necessarily straightforward drama, but, you know, I'm not talking about CSI kind of drama and those sorts of things, or ER or any of that. I was thinking, you know, I want to do, you know, I'd like to do a dramatic fantasy series. I'd like to do a dramatic science fiction series. I'd like to do, you know, different things like that. Maybe even historical stuff, but a little comedy show about robots, that wasn't actually in the in on the planning board. That wasn't on the cards as far as I was concerned. It was a fun little thing to do to get us noticed. And it's just surprising, of course, after all this time, that it's still around. And it's kind of the flagship of DRE. We've had some success with the Doctor Who's. People like it. We've had a lot of disasters with the Doctor Who's. And we still haven't finished what was initially supposed to be season one of Doctor Who. And I only mention that because it's all a part of that beginning story of how Robot started. Because we've struggled ever since to come up with, you know, the plan to get it all together as we intended it. So this whole plan took a huge curve, and we never did get things going the way they were supposed to be going. Luckily, we've gotten a lot of those Doctor Who's out there and produced, but it's taken years for some of it. It's taken years for all of it. I mean, the first story itself, I wrote the very first draft. It was just a fan fiction way back in the early 90s. So the Minds of Mandor, that's old. That's been a long time coming together, and it came together finally, I think, around 2005, 2006. So again, this is the beginning of the story. So while I was trying to pull that stuff together, we started doing Robots. So we did the first couple, and after the first two, I thought, maybe we won't do any more. So I made a little joke about the series being canceled at the end of episode two. And that was the end of season one. And then somewhere in that area, I don't remember if we'd done a couple more within what became season two or what. But at some point, Jack Ward and Andrew Dorfman of the Sonic Society heard this. I can't remember if I sent them to them because they were asking for shows, or someone suggested that I send them to them, or somebody else sent them to them, or sent them a link to the website. I don't know how it all happened. That's 10 years ago, and my memory is not very good, let's be honest. So I don't know how that all started. I can't recall. Others hopefully will fill in the blanks later, but basically I was asked, you know, if we could produce more, you know, how many of these we had, and could we do it for about 13, 14 weeks or something. And, you know, that when you're asked something like that, first of all, you go, what? Then you go, I don't know if we can do that. And then you go, well, that wasn't what I was planning to do. And I've got to get these Doctor Who's done. And I've got to get this other thing started. And, well, sure, why not? So, you know, it's just that kind of thing. And it's just a thing of knowing that you're going to have a built-in audience that's going to hear this and thus hear DRE material. And hopefully, you know, find the website and find other shows that we end up producing, so we'll get a following from that. So it was kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, we're going to be on the radio, you know, up in Canada. It's college radio, but we're going to be on radio, and we're also going to be on their website, and they have a decent following. Well, sure, of course. How many do you want me to produce? I'll produce them. You know, so we ended up doing about 16, I think, that first year, which made up the first two seasons. So we had the first two, and then we had about 14 more, something like that, for season two. And that's why we're here today. If it hadn't been for that order of episodes, if they hadn't said, how many have you got? And I had to say, 2, 3, but we can produce more. How many do you want? You know, well, we'd like, you know, a whole season. So it's like, okay, well, I can do you about 13 more, sure. So we did. That's, you know, that's how it happened. And then it was like, okay, well, we've had basically seasons one and two. You're going to produce season three? Yeah, sure, we'll produce season three. We'll do another season. And, you know, it just once we were in for 2 and 3 seasons, it was just a case of, you know, we've got something here, and why would we stop now? So even though we kind of parted company with the Sonic Society somewhere around season 4, for various reasons, it didn't end. You know, it didn't end, and there was no reason for it to end, because by that time we did have a following, and we did have people who were enjoying it and asking for it, and tuning in and downloading it, and it was wonderful. And it was fun. It was so much fun to do, and by then we had this regular ensemble cast that was eager to do it and happy to do it, having a hell of a fun time doing it. Why would we not keep going? And so, yeah, we went on through season 4 and 5, and we had that rocky start, and then it just sort of exploded, and that was how it all began.
Oh, it's really you! I'm such a huge fan, Mr. Cliffhanger, sir.
Of course you are, little guy. Now get out of my way. I have to go and make myself look amazing.
I'm sorry about that, Briscoe, my boy. It seems Cliffhanger is a bit full of himself.
Sorry? For what? Did you see that?
What? Cliffhanger being rude to you?
No, not that. He actually spoke to me. Me? Oh, Zimmy, do it!
Not to worry, I'm on it, boss.
I was asked by a fan who wishes to remain anonymous, we'll call her Mary, exactly why it was that I did Season 1 Revisited, and if I planned to do Season 2 Revisited. And the quick answer for the Season 2 Revisited is yes, I planned to do it. As a matter of fact, we recorded new material for it a few years ago, and one of these days, hopefully, I will have the time to put that together. I just haven't had the time. That's the reason why it hasn't happened. Season 1 Revisited, I always felt like 2 episodes, that's not a season. We didn't technically have a beginning. We had turned it into a proper sitcom along the way, especially towards the end of season 2 and through season 3 and 4, as the episodes got longer and the stories got more intricate and complex and involved. And, you know, when we started telling stories, as well as just having all this comedy mayhem going on, it was no longer just a sketch comedy kind of thing. It was no longer a quick 10-minute deal after about the second half of season 2. So the idea was at some point, and I don't even remember what year we did that. It was a few years in. And I had wanted to do something. I at least wanted to come up with an episode 0 or something that was an earlier point that showed how these bots came together onto this ship, the Titan 1. And, you know, just basically the beginning, just to have a beginning, to have an origin story, if you will. And I don't know if we really we sort of had that with what is now episode 1. It's, you know, the original episode 1 was Yogurt Earwax. The original episode 2 was Rover's Ball. Yogurt Earwax had absolutely nothing to do. That title had nothing really, I mean, it sort of, but the first few titles weren't supposed to necessarily represent what was going on in the show. It was some silly idea I had that it just wouldn't make any sense. So I came up with a couple, like Yogurt Earwax vaguely has to do with what happens in the first episode, the original first episode, what is now episode 2 Let's get it straight. And Don't Eat the Pudding, which was the season 2 premiere, had nothing whatsoever. That was the one that absolutely has nothing to do with anything that goes on in the episode. It has nothing to do with pudding. I don't even think pudding is mentioned, or eating, or or not eating. It was some silly idea that I had very early on that, we'll just, you know, now and again, we'll throw a title out there that has nothing to do with it. It'll just be funny for its own purpose. And I quickly changed my mind on that and said, that's not going to work. I really wanted to have titles that had something so that you could actually read the title and know which episode you're going to be listening to, which one you're going to be tuning into. Because otherwise, you know, don't eat the pudding. You don't know what that means. You might remember, it's the one where, you know, they introduced the female Squeak. And she was, you know, this sexy bot, fembot, whatever, that came onto the ship or whatever. But that, you know, don't eat the pudding tells you nothing whatsoever about that. So you might see that title and go, what is that about? So I decided I didn't want that. I didn't want people confused as to what episode was about what. I wanted it to be obvious by the title. Something like, you know, Bot War. You know what that's about. Master Quiz 3000. You know what that one's about. The Bigeonic Robot, which was the next one after Don't Eat the Pudding, which was sort of the continuation, part two, if you will. So that at least you knew what was going, you know, what was happening in the show. So from that point on, I decided no more of these crazy titles that mean nothing. So I quickly overturned them. It was too late then. I already had Don't Eat the Pudding as the title for season 2, episode 1. Somewhere in there, a few years later, I had definitely wanted to do something. And I just thought, you know, there are a few ideas. Actually, we had a few ideas laying around that we just never got around to using, as a matter of fact. And I just thought, okay, well, we've kind of got these lost episodes. We've got these scripts or partial scripts or ideas that are written in as notes. We had all this stuff written down and some of it in our heads, and it just had never happened. And there would have been, this is what would have happened had we really thought out a whole season one, if we'd have really thought about this thing as an ongoing sitcom, then this is probably what we would have done. And that's why I went back season one revisited, as was what it was called. So I ended up with 6 episodes instead of 2. And we came up with The Lost Pilot, which was just, it was a beginning. That one wasn't a lost episode. There was nothing lost about it, really. It was just the pilot that never was, because we didn't think we needed a pilot. It wasn't supposed to be that kind of show. But once it was that kind of show, I decided it needed a beginning. So I thought, originally I was just going to have it be episode 0. And then I thought, well, that just, it doesn't get counted technically, so that's not cool either. So it will actually become episode 1, and we'll just rewrite history a little bit. So, The Lost Pilot became episode 1 instead of episode 0. So, we finally had a first episode, at least. It wasn't everything I wanted it to be in the end. It's an okay episode, I guess, and at least it's a good jumping on point, because at least it sets up the series. For anybody who hasn't heard it before, it sets it up nicely, and you get a nice little introduction to a lot of the key players.
Now, I want you and that new maintenance supervisor bot, what's her name?
Shinwai!
Yes, that's the one.
Oops, sorry again, sirs.
These cargo bots should really be more careful, you know?
Oh, they will, sir, I assure you.
Good, because I have a priceless set of rare crystal-cut china in those crates somewhere, and I'd like to see them again. In one piece.
Again? Sorry, sirs. Won't happen again. Hopefully.
It won't happen again, sir. You have my word.
Good. Now, as I was saying, I want you and Shinwipe to get this new robotic maintenance crew settled in and ready to fly within the hour. Got it?
Oh, you betcha, Captain. We'll have everything shapeshift. Ship-shape, sir. You can count on it.
Never doubted it for a second, Putch.
Thank you, sir.
Now, as you were...
Whoops! Sorry again, sir.
I crystal cut china. Whoops. Whoops. I believe you said something about giving me your word, Officer Putch.
Oh, boy.
And it shows, it's also unique in that it shows the human captain that they had, played by David Ault, that they had before the regular series starts, where, you know, everybody dies. Technically, in Yogurt Earwax, and Rover's Ball, and Rebel Without a Clue, and The Great Lost Heart, and Cliffhanger, technically in all those episodes, there's a human crew on board. We don't interact with them except for maybe a captain or two. I think there was another episode where there was a human captain. I don't think it was the same one we did in The Lost Pilot. But anyway, the human crew ends up dying in the very beginning of season two, in the very first episode, where basically Excelsior hits the ship. He crashes into the ship. It's a long story, and it never really got resolved. The whole Excelsior squeak thing never really got resolved, why they were there to begin with. I had actually this whole thing in my head, this whole idea, story arc, storyline, where I would eventually explain that Excelsior and Squeak snuck on board because they were trying to take over or something. You know, it was part of Excelsior's plan to take over the universe. You know, he was always blustering about that, and he was going to take over the universe, and it never happened. And really, I guess when we did the League of Evil Bots, we probably should have had him in there all the time, too. So, but he ended up really not being a bad guy. So it kind of all got tossed aside. It shoved to the side for some reason, and we never explained it. And I don't know why. Maybe someday in a flashback or something we'll explain it, but at this point, it's not been done, and I can tell you in Season 8, that has nothing to do with it either. Excelsior's not even in it. Neither is Squeak. Spoilers, I've given that away. So that's not really giving anything away. They're just not there. Their storylines pretty much have ended, and they've moved on. So anyone tuning in to Season 8, who maybe haven't heard any for a few years, and expecting to see some of that old cast, you might be disappointed some of those people won't, or some of those bots, will not be involved in the newer shows, because we've moved the series on quite a bit over the last 10 years, and certain cast members have moved on, and certain cast members are now playing new bots, new characters. So because, you know, there's a limit to what you can do creatively with any character. You know, at some point there will be a saturation point. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, at some point, the writers run out of ideas, or it just comes to a natural conclusion. With Squeak and Excelsior, I think it came to a natural conclusion where to keep them around just wouldn't have served the characters, and it wouldn't have served the series. And it's kind of the same way with Briscoe. Briscoe's been in and out for a few years now, and it's just because, you know, we get the joke. There's only so much you can do with it, and that's one thing that I've been asked about too, is Briscoe, and I don't want to go too much into it now. There's two other specials we've got to get through for this anniversary, and at some point I'll talk about that. But at this point, yeah, I could just tell you folks that there comes a point as a writer, as a producer, and as an actor even, that you've done what you can do with your character, with whatever character it might be, whether it's Briscoe or Squeak, or, you know, there's just so far you can go. Some characters can go for years. You know, Putch, yeah, he's kind of the star of the thing. He's kind of the glue that holds it together. And I don't know, I can't quite imagine doing it without Putch and Joe Thomas, who plays Putch. It'd be kind of difficult, because it's kind of been about Putch all this time. When you really break it down, if you've listened to every single episode up to this point, then you know Putch is kind of the show. It's sort of his show, and he's intertwined with it. There's just, you know, there's no ifs or ands about that. A lot of people think of it as Briscoe's show because they love Briscoe and he's their favorite character. And that was unexpected, too. Briscoe being such a huge character, that I attribute to a couple of factors. One is Kyle Bors. He just played that part, you know, to the hilt. He just took it and ran with it. And Briscoe's so lovable. And he made him that way. That's why Kyle did that. It's not in the writing. That's not at all to be attributed to me. That's more to do with the performance, and then the fact that he's such an innocent. The character's such an innocent, and everybody loves that type of character. So they're going to identify with that character because he's kind of the heart of the show in that regard. And he pulls at people's heartstrings, and he can walk into a scene or zip into a scene. He doesn't really walk because he moves along on one wheel. For anybody who doesn't know, he doesn't get it. He zips around the ship on one wheel. He's just this little guy who cleans. He's kind of like I always pictured him, sort of as one of those little vacuum cleaners. What are they? Dirt devils or something? The little ones, you know, the little portable ones. But he's on a little wheel. And he's got all these little nozzles and brushes and things that are inside his casing that come out and do this. And he's got the vacuum cleaner bit and, you know, so on and so forth. And tools. He's sort of like a mix between R2-D2 and one of those little dirt devil things. So that's how I always pictured Briscoe. And then he's got this little face that lights up and changes his expression with lights. That's how I pictured him. And he rolls along on one little wheel and zips. He zips. Zzz. That's actually me doing that sound effect that you hear as Briscoe. But it's sped up and what have you. You know, an effect added to it. So, now you know. But that's what he does. He zips around the ship on one wheel and he comes in. And he can just come in the middle of something completely unrelated is going on. He zips in and says, zippity-doo, gets all the laughs. Everybody's forgotten what's going on, and it's all about Briscoe suddenly. So, and then he can zip back out, and everybody will say, oh, that was the best bit of the whole episode. And it's nothing. You know, it's just Kyle, zippity-doo, and that's it. And that's the character. That, to me, is the character. So, he has layers. He's had a story arc. Or story arcs, I don't know. He's developed over the years, and yet he's still the same, and he's just as lovable. And when he does appear, it's an event. You know, he's not there every single episode. It's not called for. He doesn't have to be. And I honestly wouldn't know what to do if he was there every single episode. So I have personally run out of ideas to give to Briscoe all the time. I mean, once in a while you'll get an idea. So he's not completely useless, but there are times, you know, there certainly more times than not we can do without him. But it's nice to have him in once in a while. So you know, it could happen. He could come back soon, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But yeah, getting back to what the question was about. Season 1 Revisited, and ultimately Season 2 Revisited. Why did I do Season 1? Because I wanted to add more to it, and I had a few ideas laying around. I had a few partial scripts laying around and just different stuff, and I always had this vision of finishing that first or second season. Actually, Season 2 was supposed to end with the episode titled Cliffhanger. That was the original plan. For whatever reason, SantaCon Day ends up being the season finale. And that was just because we had reached the end of what we were supposed to deliver that year. And for whatever reason, I didn't get around doing it, but I had this idea in my head all along that the season was going to end on an episode called Cliffhanger. And it literally was going to be a cliffhanger, and there was a character called Cliffhanger, played by my good friend, Ron Smith, who also plays the Doctor in DRE's Doctor Who Adventures. He was our first Doctor. There's now a second Doctor, Jeff Niles plays. But Ron was our first one, and he was always my idea of cliffhanger, because I just knew he would be perfect for that, because he can play that sort of overbearing character. He's just got that in him somehow. He can play that. He can play it. You know, he can play just about anything. He's a great actor. But you know, knowing him personally, I knew he could do this part, and I always had that in mind, and it never happened. So. A few years in, I said, okay, we're finally going to do this episode. It is going to be a season finale, a cliffhanger, if you will. But it'll be the end of season one. It was actually supposed to be the end of season two. So you folks know that it was supposed to be there. And I had a few other ideas rolling around, so I came up with, you know, a few more episodes. And we ended up with 6 episodes for season one revisited. It's not the original season one, but that's what we ended up with, and it's official. That's canon. So for all you people out there that think about canon, that's it. We don't have any additional episodes to add to season two, but the technical side of season two is not perfect. There are a lot of things that need fixed. And in order to fix a lot of it, I had to re-record a lot of the dialogue. So I got a few people to re-record their dialogue to match it as closely as it was the first time. And sort of like the way we did with Yogurt Earwax and Rover's Balm, where we completely redid. I actually rewrote both of those episodes and added things and extended it. Some of the episodes are also going to have slight extensions for season two revisited, if and when I finally get around to doing it. Someday I hope to get the time to do it, but, you know, there's always something else. But I've never been happy with the fact that season two kind of doesn't fit with the rest of the series because the quality is not the same. There's some technical issues along the way, and some of it is missing effects, like the ship sound effect of the humming in the background of the Titan One. I didn't actually come up with that idea until like the very last episode or two of season two. That's when I finally said, you know what, we ought to have a sound effect in there with the ship humming, because you're on a spaceship, you ought to hear that. So I started adding that. So from that point on, from like episode 18, 19, somewhere in there, 17, 18, 19, that you start to hear that hum of the Titan One. You know you're on a ship because you hear that hum. But before that, we didn't have that. Season one now has it, but season two, for the most part, does not, except for those last few episodes. So I've always meant to go back and add the hum and fix a few other little things. There's a number of mostly minor things, and there was an issue with Joe Thomas's recordings in those days too, in that season in particular, where if it's played through, I don't know, a radio or something, he gets lost. He's in the background instead of in the front, you know, instead of the foreground. He's barely heard, if heard at all, in those instances. So that's always bothered me. It's a bit embarrassing. And that's just a technical issue that we fixed over time. So that problem doesn't appear from season three on, I'm pretty sure. So season two, however, has that problem throughout. So there's various different things like that that need fixed. So mostly it's technical stuff. It's not as much as season one, where I actually went back and extended the short episodes and added story to them. With season two, it's not so much that as in I would have to fix a lot of technical problems. And someday, hopefully.
Sure did, Butch. Well, first of all, I heard SantaCon's jingle bells. Boy, they sure are loud, aren't they? Then Santacon told me that he'd obliterate the cosmos, ho ho ho, and he wished me a Merry Santacon Day. It was so exciting, Butch, and I got the super deluxe gunk cleaner I asked for, and bunches of extra filters. I can't wait to use it. This has been the best Santacon Day ever! Zippity-doo!
I could probably record for the next 12 hours just me talking about, you know, 10 years of the show and things that have happened and various stories behind the scenes and you know, how I came up with this and how we came up with that. But I'm not going to take that kind of time. I don't want this particular special to be that long. And there are two other specials in which we all speak about the show and various different subjects. And, you know, the third and final special in this series, we're going to have a podcast show, which is basically just a live conversation between myself, Jeff Niles, and maybe one or two other people. And with a whole bunch of other stuff going on. So we will talk more then about a lot of this stuff. So I'm not going to go too deeply into the rest of this. I can just say, you know, 10 years is a truly amazing thing when you think about it with a show like this, because it wasn't planned. It's just something that's happened through happenstance. It just so happens that this show kept going. Jeff Niles came up with a phrase some years ago to describe this show, and it's way back now. I don't even remember when he coined this phrase, but it's so true. It's the little show that could, because every time you think it's done, it's finished, for whatever reason, we keep going, and it sort of regenerates, to use a Doctor Who term, into something slightly different and new, and is interesting again, and hopefully fun again, and keeps going. We've had our missteps along the way. I'm not going to say it's perfect. It certainly isn't. from the beginning, it's not been perfect. It's a very modest beginning, in my opinion. And sometimes people say I'm a little too harsh on myself and on that. And the one thing I want to stress about this, and the fact that it's been 10 years, and the reason it's been 10 years, the reason it's been 10 years is not because I've just kept going. It's not because Mr. Ego decided, oh, I've got to keep doing this, and this is great, and let's, you know, we're going to do this no matter what. No way. I mean, I never, ever thought we'd still be doing it, to be honest with you, after 10 years. I thought, you know, once we got through, like, the third and fourth season, I thought, we'll go for 5 or 6, maybe 7, I don't know. I just never thought we would ever go that far. And there was a point or two which perhaps I almost thought I should have canceled it because of various things that might have happened along the way and certain people exiting at certain points. And when I thought, well, I can't do this without this person. Because it's been an ensemble. I mean, not just the cast, but creating it has been an ensemble. It wasn't just, you know, I wasn't the only person that was shooting out ideas when we were coming up with this show. I am called the creator of the show. I'm the executive producer of the show. I've directed most all of them. I've written a good number, not all of them, certainly, but 90%, 80%, I don't know. I haven't actually sat down and counted and can give you specifics, but the bottom line is, it's not all about me. I'm not the person that's been responsible for this whole thing, and I'm not the person that's been responsible for it going on for 10 years. The beginning, you know, to start with, the people that are responsible for it ongoing are you people that's listening, because you listen. And you want it, and you've shown that you love it, and that you want it, and you want it to still be there. You've probably been missing it for a couple of years, because we've been off the air for a while, for various reasons. but you've still said you want it. I've actually had more feedback in the last couple of years about wanting to hear Robots of the Company, and so glad that it's there, and so glad that it is what it is, that, you know, I knew we had to come back, and once we reached the 10th anniversary, there was no doubt we had to come back and do something. I never imagined we were going to do 10 new episodes for season 8. The original plan was about 5. So it's been something also that has grown. It's the little show that could. So it keeps going. Also, it's because of, you know, the people that helped me start it, the people that were brainstorming with me, like Kay Wu, Kyle Bors, people who have brainstormed with me along the way, like Jeff Niles. Victor Aurelius lately has helped me out with a few ideas, and has helped me out in so many ways with Dream Realm Enterprises, not just robots. But that's just one of the, you know, that's some of the newer edition. And I can't forget to mention probably the most important person, because he was there more or less from the beginning and went through past the middle, and was responsible for a lot of what you have heard. And his name is Vince Staden. He's a brilliant writer, so funny in the things that he writes. He's come up with so many staple ideas in this show, and he has helped to shape what this show became. It was just a sketch comedy shorts show. We've come up with another of those lately, just recently, called Polyglums. You may have heard it. If you haven't, go listen to it. Go download it. It's on this site. But he helped to turn it from being just that into a sitcom, because he started pitching those kinds of ideas to me, and he started writing those kinds of scripts. And that's when I saw the potential for what it could be. And it kind of went from there, and he helped to metamorphize, if that's the right word, sort of helped to regenerate it into what it became, that sitcom. He didn't do it all on his own. I didn't do it all on my own. That's the point. It's not about one guy. And there's so many times when people say, oh, I love that show, and I love what you've done with it. You've really, you know, you've done this, and it's wonderful you did that. And they'll point out, oh, I love this episode, and I love that episode. And 9 times out of 10, it's not an episode I wrote. I'm always in there. You know, there's a little bit of me in all of that, because I've been the script editor from the beginning. I've been, you know, the director and the producer and so on. But I'm not responsible for every word that has been uttered on this show. Vince Staden did a lot of it. In those earlier years, from season 3 on in particular, he was there before that. But from 3 on through 5 or 6, he was a principal player. And I just want to give credit where credit is due, because that guy did a lot. Kay Wu did a lot. We used to brainstorm a lot. She wrote at least an episode. Kyle Boers brainstormed a lot with me. He came up with a lot of ideas. He may more or less created the character of Briscoe. I may have come up with the concept, but, you know, the skeleton, if you will, of that character. But he shaped it and created it through the acting and through the ideas of his very creative brain, which is also quite brilliant. He's a very talented guy. So all these people are so talented, and there's probably more besides that I haven't even talked about, and I apologize if I missed anybody, but, you know, there's just so much time to cover everything, and there's no way I can get through 10 years. I can't talk about every moment of 10 years. I can just say that without all those people, this would not happen. It would never have happened. It never would have gone on like this. If it were just me, and that's it, if I was the only creative force behind this, yeah, we'd have only done 2 episodes, probably, maybe 5. That would have been it, and I would have been tapped out at that point. But because I had these other creative voices behind me, talking to me, and then getting inside my head, because of that, it's kept going. And it's the only reason it's kept going, is all those factors, is the wonderful creative people that have helped me, the wonderful fans who've supported it, and the people who said, hey, we want a whole season. Can you give us a whole season? Jack Ward and Andrew Dorfman. Andrew Dorfman has played Talkie Tree, a very popular character, a crazy mechanical tree that pops up now and again and drives us all crazy. He's been very instrumental there. I can't thank all those people enough, because they really are the ones. You guys are all the ones that have made this possible. We're here working our butts off to do season 8 and talking about the 10th anniversary because of you. And that's the only reason. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for all of you. The people who listen, the people who give us input, the people who give us feedback, and of course the wonderful creative people who have helped me to shape this show and keep it going and make it the little show that could. So thank you everyone who's been involved in this. whether you've been on staff, being involved in it, or just listening and supporting the show, you're the people that make it happen. And there would be no reason to do it without you people. So that's about all I have to say on the subject for now. And we will talk again in the next special. So I hope that you've enjoyed this one.
You have been listening to Robots of the Company, The Creative Perspective, a celebration of 10 years of Robots of the Company, featuring a candid interview with series creator, executive producer, and head writer Jonathan Patrick Russell. The Robots of the Company theme tune was composed and performed by Daryl Looney. Additional music was provided by Kevin MacLeod. The post-production editor, sound designer, script editor, producer, and director was Jonathan Patrick Russell. The series Robots of the Company was created by Jonathan Patrick Russell, and the copyright is held by Dream Realm Enterprises. Any rebroadcast or reproduction of this program without the express written permission of Dream Realm Enterprises is strictly prohibited. But we're easy. Ask. Just ask. Thank you for listening. We invite you to visit us on the web at dreamrealmsite.com, as if you're not already there. And if you'd like to email us with any of your comments or questions, you may do so at darkbuilding1@yahoo.com. That's darkbuilding spelled out with the number 1@yahoo.com. We were speaking candidly during the making of this audiogram. There are also going to be even more celebrations of the 10th anniversary coming your way very soon with other specials, so stay tuned for that. Plus, Season 8 is coming your way real soon, and you won't want to miss that, believe you me. Until then, this is the Creditor, as always, asking you to please stay tuned. This program is copyright 2015, all rights reserved, and is brought to you by none other than Dream Realm Enterprises. The journey continues.